This is the LFC podcasting couch, and there was some different music there, Pete.
Yes, because it's World Cup time.
World Cup time, and we've got some samba music. I know it's Russia, but Russia's got fucking weird music.
And they're drunk with the vodkas and
there's
stuff.
There's nothing with the vodka. My name is George. Obviously, I'm talking with the coach here, if you haven't noticed already. And it's World Cup fever. We've got new music,
yes,
especially for the World Cup. Did you like the song there, Pete?
That's me all day. That's that flavor.
That's that flavor.
That's that flavor, coach flavor right there. That's
the coach flavor. That's
Just see me dance to that.
It's actually something I made myself. I've got this like this DJ sort of program. It's like on your phone, and you get little bits and like little samples, and you create beats and you create things. And yeah, so I put
free?
I think it may have cost me a little bit, like $1 or something that. But I think it's called like a DJ rock table or fuck, I don't know what it's called, but yeah, it made that little song, and it's got us into the vibe.
Make sure we get a ball out. Let's just start juggling.
Yeah. It's like
whilst we're potting, because we can do that, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can. We used to play football once upon a time together.
Yeah, and futsal and everything. So.
Yeah, everything. Well, it is the World Cup time. It is the World Cup, I should say. It's World Cup time.
I love this time.
You love this time.
Yeah.
It's strange because you watch club football for so long. Club football, it was actually like common thought to everybody that club football is better than world football. Whether that is the Euro, whether it's the African Cup of Nations, whether it's the Asian Cup or the World Cup. And one of the reasons for that is because you have to admit the football is better when you go on a club level. But when you do look at it now, it's a bit more exciting with the international game because you don't know what's going to happen. Everyone isn't coached and drilled 100% the way that a club team is. So there's a little bit more flair that comes into it.
It's play to win. That's what I love about the World Cup. It's not like, we've got a couple of weeks here. We can, we can settle ourselves into it. We'll get fit eventually. Like, no. It's do or die almost every match, even though there is a group stage and everything. But at the end of the day, 4 points get you out sometimes in the group. Sometimes you need more. So every game is a must-win game in World Cup. That's why I love it. It's like it's punch for punch.
Yeah.
It's such a strategic, tactical event where it's like you just see minds battling each other.
And it's in the moment. Like I was saying, with club football, especially with someone like Jurgen Klopp and like this new like breed of managers, everything is so planned, and every single outcome is planned for. I'm not saying that doesn't happen in the World Cup, but they don't have that much time, so they're just a lot of the times they're going, this is the system, this is what we're playing. But if you have an idea, go for it, do it.
I tell you what else I love about the World Cup though, it's similar to, I'm not comparing it to this, but it's in basketball, like every team's got that one player that you just know can win you a game.
Yeah.
Whereas the World Cup is kind of like, well, if things aren't working, pass it to Messi. Like just, because that's what we got now. Like, Messi, please win us the game because we're relying so heavily on you, or Salah for Egypt, or Suarez with Uruguay. Like, that's what I love about the World Cup. There's that heavily reliance on a player sometimes. I love that though.
You know what it is as well? And we see this happen obviously towards an end of a game, but I'll use the analogy of a boxing match. What's more exciting in a boxing match? Do you like the first round or do you like first round where they're both full of energy?
Round
they're
9,
both,
10, 11.
Yeah, with the first round, they're both full of energy, they're both very strong, and they're both jabbing and they're seeing each other out. Or do you like round 12 where they're both fucking all over the place, they're throwing haymakers, like, I just need to win. Yeah. I feel like the World Cup is more in that 11 and 12 because, when it does get to knockout round, every single game counts. Every minute counts, and, you got teams going, fuck it, let's just, like, remember what was it? Chile, what they were doing in the last World... Was it the last World Cup where they were going 3-4-3?
Yeah.
I mean, now we're seeing teams do 3-4-3, but that was the first time we'd sort of seen it in a major sort of competition being used to success. And
but what I loved was with Spain in the... I think it was 2010 World Cup, when they're winning games 1-0.
Yeah.
But dominate like 95% possession. It was like... We don't have to score goals here because our plan, we're just going to keep the ball. Then we're just going to keep it and keep it. We're going to score, then keep it. And just watch the teams run. And you can tell that was their plan. And, they end up winning the World Cup that year.
And you do have teams that there are, I mean, the norm is like what I was saying. You got teams that maybe haven't worked with each other for that long. They put a system in place and then they say to the players, now go and express yourselves. You're playing for your country. It's not even express yourself. It's you're in war. And if you lose, you die. And your country is all behind you, and it's that sort of that national pride sort of thing. I'm playing for Australia. I'm playing for England. I'm playing for Brazil. It's that sort of thing. But you do get these anomalies that like a Spain, like a Germany in the last World Cup, and in this World Cup, we would probably argue it's probably Brazil, where everyone's on the right wavelength. You know, they all come away from their clubs at the right time. You know, like for instance, Firmino and Coutinho, we did see for Liverpool, we did see them. They were racing to the Brazil camp, and they wanted to get there as soon as possible. They seem, even though people are saying that Brazil have, you know, they're not the perfect team. They, you know, they're not on the same wavelength. They're more so than other sides are.
Oh yeah, I think we'll get into that soon. But if you're talking about in this World Cup, why I'm so excited is because I think you've got a lot of the players in their peak, or players approaching their peak, or that age, whether 25, 26, 27, 24. If you look at some of the French players, some of the Brazilian players, some of the Spanish players, they're peaking.
Mm.
And that's why I think it's going to be such an exciting World Cup.
Absolutely. Well, what we're going to do here is it's just a very relaxed show. We've now been recording for roughly 6 minutes. We've got about, you know, 40 or so to just very in a very relaxed manner, just go through the groups. If we like a team, if we like a group, if we like a situation, we like a matchup, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about the team, star players that we know of. And just you know, a very laid back enjoyable look at the World Cup, seeing as though it's starting in what, 24, less than 24?
Tonight for us.
Tonight, yeah. Is it? Oh, Jesus.
1 a.m. is the first game.
1 a.m. Well, there we go. So if this gets out soon enough, people will be able to hear it and listen to it. And yeah, and you can even listen to it because we're going to be doing groups all over the place. We're going to be going from A all the way to, what is it, G. So, you know, if there's like the Australia game tomorrow for our Aussie listeners. You can listen to that part of the show or whatever you want. So we'll start off with Group A. We've got Russia, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Uruguay, Pete.
The first game is going to be Egypt-Uruguay.
Yeah?
At 10. Oh, no, obviously the Russia-Saudi Arabia is our first one, then it goes Egypt-Uruguay. Yeah. I think Egypt-Uruguay are the two teams that will get out of the group.
Hmm.
The first game is actually, in my opinion, always the most important game in the group.
It's also an important game for the World Cup in general. Remember, what was it? Was it 2010 or 2006 where there was that bomb of a goal? Like, I think it was, I can't remember.
Maxi Rodriguez?
Was it Maxi Rodriguez? Yeah, it was, for Argentina. Was that seven? That was six.
Yeah.
That was 2006. So in the first game of the World Cup, you often get this weird sort of first game where, and does the host nation always play first?
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously that's why we've got Russia and Saudi Arabia. But yeah, as you were saying, Egypt, Uruguay, probably the favourites in that group.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think that when they're versing each other first is so tough because, I reckon the most important match of the group stage is the first one because you get the 3 points in your first game.
Mm.
On average, 4 points will get you out of a group sometimes, depending, you know, finishing second, whatever it is. But so, you know, if you win the first game, you've got two games. If you can get 2 points out of the next two games,
mm-hmm.
you're more than likely out of your group.
What's that, three? That's 5 points.
Yeah. So more than likely out of your group. So it sets the tone.
Well, we do think Egypt and Uruguay are the favourites there. So Egypt, we've got, you know, players to watch. Obviously, we've got Liverpool's Mohamed Salah for our Liverpool supporters that do listen to this podcast. That's exciting for everybody. There's Mohamed Elneny. And obviously, they've got the goalkeeper as well, who's not too bad. Pete, we're going to try and get some teams up on your phone there. But for Uruguay, obviously, they've got Edinson Cavani. They've got Luis Suarez, former Liverpool player.
Godin.
They got Godin.
The one who's playing Liverpool, Sebastian Coates.
Coates is starting for them, yeah. Is he? Wow. So what do you think about that game? So obviously, if these two teams are the ones that are favourites to go through, what do we think about this game?
Does Salah play?
He didn't train.
That's what I'm saying. So look, I think Uruguay's going to win anyway, even if Salah does play.
You know what you know what I would actually do if I was Egypt? I would say, let's just rest Salah for this one. Rest him. Let his shoulder get better. Maybe have him on the bench. But even having a player on the bench, you'd have to go through a certain amount of warm-up. So maybe if they can trick Uruguay enough into saying, look, don't show Salah doing his warm-ups or don't show everybody, just so that they can believe that he could come on, but don't use him. Because I think you're better off with Egypt going full throttle against Russia, Saudi Arabia, getting 3 points from each, 6 points, and then, you know, you just leave this game up to chance. Maybe you get a draw,
yeah.
And then you're still on par, because Uruguay are the favourites in that group, yeah. Behind as well as Egypt. So I'd say if you're Egypt, you rest Salah, you want him for the rest of the tournament. You don't want to just put him too early in this game, he doesn't recover.
And not just that, like, think about not stereotyping, but you think about the South Americans and like the Uruguayans, like if they know Salah's not 100% fit, they're going to target him.
Mm.
It's one of those ones where you protect him. So I think that could be one of the smarter decisions to do.
Hmm.
But then again, I've got such a soft spot for Suarez. I think he's the best striker in the world, even to today. I'd love to see Suarez do well again in this World Cup.
Hmm.
So I do think Uruguay is going to win.
Yeah.
And I do think they'll top their group.
Yeah. I was just going to quickly ask you, I wanted to try and get all the sort of people that we can... Oh, here we go. Look at this, what I found here. This is not too bad. I was going to say with Russia, because they are obviously the host nation, there was a period of time, if I'm not mistaken, what they was Arshavin. Arshavin was Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
They had this little sort of golden moment. It was
about 10 years ago.
Yeah, like Yuri Zhirkov.
Yeah, it was about 10 years
ago. He's still playing, and I think you still saw him.
Yeah.
That was the left wing back for Chelsea once upon a time.
About 10 years ago, they were quite good.
Hmm.
Russia were quite decent. But now, I don't know what they're like now, to be honest with you.
So here we got a key player. Here we got Igor Akinfeev.
That's the goalkeeper.
Akinfeev, a talented goalkeeper who captains the team. He has tended to make mistakes in big games.
Key player. Makes mistakes in big games. That's a stupid analysis there.
And Russia go into the draw as the lowest ranked of the 32 teams, having failed to advance past the group stage of any tournament since 2008.
There you go, 10 years ago, when they were good.
There you go. Well, I'm using the telegraph.co.uk, so I'm not plagiarizing in any way. We can't see them going through. I mean, they've got the home ground advantage. That can sometimes be a thing.
And Putin pushing them.
Yeah, and Putin pushing them as well.
Referees back pockets, but anyway.
And then Saudi Arabia, it says star player Mohammed Al Salawi from Al Nasser. I don't know what that means. 30-year-old striker. I don't really like the look of
Well, their coach is actually was an ex-international for...
Antonio Pizzi.
I think it was a Uruguayan or Argentinian international.
Yeah, who was he was named on Tuesday as the new coach. And he... Yeah. I don't know what else he's done since then. But anyway. Okay. Well, sounds good. Egypt, Uruguay, favourites in that group.
We know who the favourites are, but they're the best players.
Yeah. We go to Group B. And I'll name the four countries. The first match is Morocco versus Iran. Second match is Portugal versus Spain. I mean,
now this is something to talk about.
Now this is Group B. So Morocco, Iran, Portugal, and Spain. We can't see two other teams other than Portugal and Spain going through in this one.
We've just finished saying the first game is probably the most important game of the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got Spain versus Portugal in the first group game, and what have they just done 24 hours before the World Cup starts?
They've sacked their coach.
They've gotten rid of their undefeated coach. 16 games, zero losses.
That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible.
Because the dirty prick went and got and done a deal on the side with the bigger pricks, the bigger dirty pricks with Real Madrid.
Yeah. So, yeah, obviously the news is broken that Spain have sacked their coach. What is it? Julen Lopetegui.
Yeah, and the coach now at the moment, out of the caretaker, is
Fernando Hierro.
Yeah, Fernando Hierro.
I like Hierro. I mean, usually
he's a good player.
Yeah, usually defenders make for quite analytical and tactically analytical players. I mean, coaches, I would say, just because when you are a defender, you're reading the game.
You see the game, right?
I think midfielders, like what you've seen, sort of Zidane, you would think that they would have an understanding of the whole pitch, but when you get an attacking style player, I mean, Zidane was an attacking style player, you do get more of a rallying of the troops sort of coaching mentality. But your defenders are usually, let's build from the back, let's make sure we don't concede, and then just let your forward and midfield players express themselves. Like you said, they were undefeated in the group stages, but Spain have been pretty strong across all of the
international... Well, they put six past Argentina.
Yeah.
In the build-up to the World Cup. 6-1.
Yeah, 6-1. The thing I would say about Spain is I reckon in the last World Cup, it was all about... Because that would have been 2014, and 2010 was... They won it, didn't they? Yeah. So...
And 2012 Euro.
Yeah, so what you would say is that the pressure was on them in 2014. It's like they're the ones. They're the big team. They've got to win. All the pressure's on them, you know, but... Now that's gone. The pressure's now on, I would say, Brazil.
Germany.
You know, Germany as well, because I reckon Brazil mostly from anyone. Germany, because they're the former world champions, or the current champions. And then even a team like Argentina because of the whole Messi thing. But Spain, going under the radar a little bit. Like you said, undefeated, it's going under the radar.
Well, they were my dark horse for the tournament.
Yeah.
Until this moment.
See, dark horse. Well, the thing is, They're even more of a dark horse now. That suits them. It suits them to be an underdog. Not. I think it suits any team to be an underdog. You know, given extenuating circumstances. But I reckon, especially, it just says here, David De Gea in goal. My God,
best goalkeeper in the world.
You don't have to. I mean, Casillas, even though he was good for the national team, I think at the moment there's not. I think De Gea now is would be, because that was towards the end of Casillas's sort of reign that they won the World Cup. Was it? No, it would have been 8 years ago. It would have been okay. But yeah, I just think De Gea is such a good goalkeeper. I think he can keep him in games single-handedly.
He's the best goalkeeper in the world. That's simple as that.
Yeah.
So, and Spain arguably have the best back four in the World Cup as well. Arguably.
Yeah.
With Ramos, Piqué, centre-backs. You've got Alba on the left, and there's Carvajal on the right.
Carvajal's back as well.
You're looking at, you're looking at arguably the best back four in the World Cup.
And then we go on to Portugal now. We got both of us have a lot of Portuguese friends. We both, when we played football together, we played at a Portuguese club, Super League club, Fraser Park. So we know about Portugal.
And we don't like Portugal. I don't like Portugal anyway.
Yeah. Look. I got my girlfriend is Portuguese, so you know, when they won the Euro, I had sort of, you know, I was happy because, you know, obviously her and her family were very happy about it. She's actually half German, half Portuguese. So when the Germans and Portuguese are playing each other, it's always a thing.
So who do you go for then?
She goes Portugal.
Nah.
Key player Cristiano Ronaldo, 32. Years old. Coach Fernando Santos. What I found so funny was that for so long, Portuguese fans across the globe, mostly in Australia, were bagging out Greece for their defensive approach to Euro 2004, and they never gave us credit for winning that tournament. Now, they employed the former Greek coach, Fernando Santos, who is a defensive-minded coach, and all of a sudden, Portugal do well in a tournament. And now people from Portugal are saying, you know what's the most important thing? Defense. That's how you win. Yeah. That's how you win a tournament.
The bloody Euro finishing third.
Yeah.
It was such bullshit. And they didn't win a game until the quarterfinals or something. They're going, piss off. In normal time, they didn't win a game until the quarterfinals, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because they won extra time a couple of times, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So the good thing about World Cup is if you finish third, you don't make it through the next round.
Yeah, there you go. That's a really good point. I know. They were trialing that for that Euro as well,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, hopefully they don't.
And
the
team that finishes third won it.
That's stupid in their group. And didn't they didn't win. They drew all their games. They drew three games.
They didn't win a game in normal time until the quarterfinals.
That's embarrassing. Anyway, well, still, I think off that, they've built a resilience. And they did have resilience in the knockout stages. They were hard to beat. And if you're hard to beat in the World Cup, you get onto extra time. You get onto, you know, even not so much penalties, but you get to an extra time stage. And if you are defensive and you're holding your nerve, maybe you've got a little bit of energy to, like what they did against France, that energy through players, like random guys like freaking, what was his name? What was it? Eder, come out of nowhere and just score a screamer from God knows where. I think they'll probably manage Ronaldo's fitness a bit more given what happened at that tournament. A lot of games in succession for him. He's also learnt how to, you know, not spit his dummy out every time he gets sort of brought off. I think with Madrid, he was a bit happier to have a bit part role, so we might see him rested a bit more.
With Portugal, they're versing Spain at the best time, really. There's just been like this earthquake in the training camp for Spain. God knows how that's affected them psychologically, because it won't affect them physically, obviously. But psychologically, if you're damaged before a major tournament, that's either an early exit or you never know, right? So for Portugal, versing them at the best time possible.
Yeah. We've got going through the team, you've got, is it Luis Patricio in goal?
Yeah.
That's their goalkeeper from the Euro. He's good. I'm pretty sure it's Luis Patricio. Then you got Pepe still in the back.
Still in the mix.
Hard ass. And then you've got João Moutinho still in midfield, still pulling the strings. And then André Silva from Manchester. Is that the Manchester City André Silva?
No, that's
Bernardo Silva. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So you've got Bernardo Silva also in the side, who's not too bad. So, yeah, what do you think about that game?
I hope Spain win. But I think I want Spain to finish first in their group. And Egypt to finish second, because that means they could verse each other.
I would want Egypt to play Spain in a bigger game than that.
Well, that you can't because it's one because of those of things. Yeah. So,
but maybe they could meet in the final.
Possibly, but I just want
that would be good. Actually, yeah.
I just want Salah Ramos round two.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good. That's actually. So what's that actually? If Spain
win their group and Egypt finish second.
Yeah, there you go.
I think they match each other.
I'll just get you to stop rubbing your legs there.
You look good today, George. I can't even talk. Sorry.
Okay. So that's Group B for us. I mean, we do have Morocco and Iran. Well, why don't we have a look very quickly at just the players from Morocco and Iran? We might hear someone that we that we recognise.
Well, so we're used to Iran, aren't we? Australia, that's where we have to verse
yeah.
the qualifications.
Yeah, so Iran, key players.
Carlos Queiroz is their manager, I think.
Yeah, Carlos Queiroz, yep, veteran Portuguese manager. So Carlos Queiroz, is that the assistant manager from Man United?
Yeah. Ferguson's assistant coach.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got, that's Iran. They've got key player Sardar Azmoun from Rubin Kazan. That's not too bad. 22-year-old forward. That's not too bad. What did he do? He was a goal-scoring threat at the 2015 Asian Cup, and he bagged 22 international goals so far at 22 years old. There you go. 22 is his number, it seems. And Morocco, we've got the coach is Hervé Renard, the French coach. Had success with other African teams, it says here. And their key player is a midfielder named Nabil Dirar from Fenerbahce. So, yeah, he was a key element of the Monaco side that won the French title last year. So
there you go.
Okay. Well, we'll move on to Group C now. This is a big group. Okay, we can...
Now we're talking.
We've got Group C. First game. Oh, by the way, we'll be watching this in Newtown at the Union Hotel. If you want to come, we're going to be watching it on the big screen.
Union Hotel.
It's in, Newtown, St. Peter's. But we'll be watching at 8 p.m. on Saturday, which is in 2 days' time for us here in Australia. France versus Australia. The other two in that group are Argentina and Iceland.
No, they're not.
No, Group C. No, it's not. Peru and Denmark.
Peru and Denmark.
Oh, it's been written the wrong way around. Sorry.
Yeah.
So France, Australia, Peru, Denmark. Look at the way they've written this.
Yeah, they've stuffed that one
they've
up.
They've stuffed that one up because they've got me going left to right, and then they've gone up to down.
That's the same thing here. Look.
Yeah,
that's shit. The same group.
Oh, well. And that's the same Thanks, group. Google. Anyway, sorry. I thought that looked weird. I'm like, there's no way that Argentina, Australia, and France can all go through because what's his name? Jose Mourinho wanted all of them to go through. So like he goes, I think, you do a job there, Argentina. Come for me, Australia. Have you seen that video? I thought that was pretty funny. I've got a soft spot for him now because he wants Australia to go through.
I still hate him.
Okay, here we go. So we've got France, Australia is the first game up. Peru, Denmark, the second one. Let's talk about France, Australia. This is for all the Aussies who listen to the LFC podcasting couch. We are an Aussie podcast, the largest Liverpool-based podcast in Australia. Let's go, France, Australia.
Call me crazy. There's a chance for us to get a result there.
You're not crazy. I tell you why, because I think there's a massive Pogba-sized... gap in France's team. And the reason I say that is because he's completely lost his weird haircut head. He's lost it. I don't know. I don't think he knows what he's doing anymore.
See, this is the thing why I don't like the French team. Number one, they're social media obsessed based team where everything's a selfie. Everything's a stupid dance, shit haircuts.
Mm.
Everyone thinks about like a celebration, like Griezmann doing that Fortnite rubbish.
Mm.
Like I can't stand, they're everything I stand against for in football, like in modern day football with the youth players growing up, instead of idolizing the right players that do the right things by working hard and showing that, you know, they turn their attention to this French side because they've got the shit haircuts, they do stupid celebrations and everything's a selfie.
And also, remember the French side that was kicking around, it would have been 4 to 8 years ago, roughly, around the Euro and stuff, there was the problem with Evra and Benzema's had issues with the club already, with the national team already, but also they all stood up against, was it Blanc?
Yeah.
Laurent Blanc, that was the coach. So they've had problems, but I did really like them at last year's Euro, or the last Euro, 2 years ago. I think for the same reason that I think Spain might do well at this tournament is because that no one really thought that they would do anything in that tournament. Now I think they've been given a bit more just because when you look at the sides, it's like a game of taking one team out, and then you get to the point where you're like, oh, you're only left with Germany, France, Brazil, blah blah blah. And when you look at France's side, it's talented, it's young and talented.
They've got a super freakish team.
Griezmann up front, Mbappe, you got Pogba in midfield, Mbappe up Kante, front, you got N'Golo Kante,
Varane,
Nabil Fekir, who's apparently can't stand on his leg, but can play a whole season for Lyon.
then there's obviously Kante, Varane, Lloris in goals. They're spoiled for players.
Mm.
But the thing is, I think versing France for Australia in the first game, again, the first great game, not knowing who you come up, like, there could be nerves, there could be some pressure, like, maybe they're not clicking just yet, but by the third game, everyone's kind of clicking again.
Yes.
So, I think for Australia to verse them in the first game, suits us rather than versing them in the third game?
It's got shades of a couple of things. The first one it's got shades of is Australia versus the Netherlands, where Tim Cahill scored that left
goal.
Foot
yeah.
super goal volley. I mean, what was the result of that game?
We lost 2-1, I think.
We lost 2-1, but we were in it.
Yeah.
And it was almost like Netherlands were like, oh, hold on, we have to wake up here a little bit because this is Australia. I think it could have that air to it. If Australia can just, if they can get a bit quicker, if they can just sort of, and by a bit quicker, just press faster, move the ball around fast, if they can just be a bit more energetic and catch France off guard, like you're saying, it could be a moment for France of going, let's just calm it down here. And in the instance of calming it down, they're not playing their game. Maybe they do settle for, like you said, a result, which is like a 1-1, 0-0, whatever it is.
So I think the French players don't have the bottle. If things aren't going their way, I don't think there's a leader on the pitch where they can kind of like go, oh, can you get us out of this rut?
Mm.
That's why I think everybody kind of like trying to pass the blame on to everybody else. That's what I think anyway.
So obviously, with our new Dutch coach, it looks like we've gone to like a 4-2-3-1.
Well, we're definitely defensively structured now under this coach.
So having said that, are they defensively structured enough to do a sort of Portugal style job?
Why not? I think why not? Because
that's a way to get at this France side, because they were dominating Portugal in that Euro final, and they lost their head. They were shooting from miles out. Griezmann did hit the bar, I remember, in that game.
According to the Van Marwijk's last press conference, you know, he spoke about us having patience on the ball when we have it, but also patience when we don't have the ball.
Yeah.
So automatically you can kind of reach into that mindset where he's kind of saying, we are going to defend, so we need to be patient.
Hmm.
But not just that, we're patient defending, so don't kind of like lose your head. But at the same time, when we've won the ball, because we've been defending, we're going to be tight, so let's be patient with the ball and move it a little bit. So you can see us kind of having that, I want to say counter-attack, but you can kind of see us having that, we're going to keep it, and then to our moments come, and then bang, we attack. I think we are going to be defend first, then see if we can score. Rather than with Ange Postecoglou, it was attack. We're going to play this kind of fluid football. We're going to try to do this, play five in the middle, three up front.
Trying to play an 8 out of 10 game with 5 out of 10 players.
Yeah. So I think this guy's going to come in, look at our strengths and play to them,
which
is, in my opinion, Australian strengths are, you know, we're a hardworking team, we're a hardworking country.
Yeah.
We are defensively quite good. We do bring good defenders through all the years of we always raise good defenders and good goalkeepers and to an extent, good midfielders. Like, so I think if you look at our squad with Aaron Moy, Mats Luongo, Jedinak, Jackson Irvine, hard workers who technically decent, like Aaron Moy, Mats Luongo, are really good technical players. And then people can actually just cause a bit of a problem in terms of energy on the pitch.
The second game that, before I get on to the second game that it reminds me of, there's also that, like you just mentioned it there, which is the mentality of Australia. Another thing that the World Cup, I mean, I should have said it at the beginning of the podcast, the thing that the World Cup does is it brings a lot of players, obviously from the same country, together playing one game of football. And one thing that you can definitely say is a country and a nation of players, no matter, you know, race or color or religion, whatever, they all have the same country mentality, it seems. You know, like you said, an Australian side will be hardworking, an Aussie battler sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like a Spanish team will be a bit more elegant, and, you know, the Portuguese team at the moment is built around, you know, a little bit in the mold of their manager. But what you do get is you get that as a chance. Australia have a chance now because together they can say, you know what, we're going to harry. We can press a little bit quicker, a little bit harder, and when we're defending, we can all be there for each other, link arms and be compact. It's that's another thing that the World Cup can bring, because everyone, especially like Uruguay, even for example, they've all got that sort of, you know, mad hungry sort of appetite for the game. And that's another thing the World Cup does. It brings a lot of people from the same country with the same mentality together, and then it's interesting to watch that unfold on the pitch. But what that brings me to the next point, the second game it reminds me of is Senegal versus France.
That's
in the 2002 World Cup.
That's where
the reason why, and I'm just going to bring up one of the players that you I think you missed, rightly so, because he's only very young, is Arzani.
Yeah.
So the reason why is because in that game we saw Senegal and France sort of butting heads a little bit, and it was the opening game of the World Cup. I'm pretty sure that was obviously South Korea and Japan, whatever, play first, but I remember that being the first major game that everyone wanted to watch because it's Zidane, Diouf was an unknown player. He was very young. If I'm not mistaken, he's maybe 20 or so, 21 at that stage. Comes in with his frosted tip haircut. And it's a moment of madness from him, a moment of sort. I think he puts through Papa Bouba Diop, if I'm not mistaken, or I think he sets it up somehow. But he completely, he was just an unknown quantity. What I want to see is, especially seeing Azani's goal just recently, yeah. It's that thing. I haven't seen many Aussie players do this, especially coming in off the left. He's 19, remember, yeah. Second youngest player, isn't he? Or the youngest?
I think he's the youngest player in the World Cup.
Because there's Trent Alexander-Arnold, who might be maybe a tad older than him. But he's a teenager at the World Cup. It's that shift of body weight. It's that little jimmy of the leg comes out and just has a crack. That's not an Australian, no offense to Aussie football, it's not an Australian thing to do, to come in and try and have a shot from outside the box coming in off the wing. All I'm saying is, if we can keep it tight, patient, like you said, and just have an outlier like that who nobody knows what he's going to do, not even him, you never know. It could be something that can play into our hands.
And I'd love to see Tim Cahill score.
Yeah. Well, that's he's an unknown quantity. Nobody knows what, because there's nobody still, I don't think, in this World Cup that can rise and head a ball like Tim Cahill. And when you've got that weapon, yeah, use it.
I hope he does score. I hope he does score, because it's good that, look, he's probably the most important player in that squad right now. Not even if he doesn't play, he's still the most important player because he's got what Tim is very good at, and I know this personally, he's good at creating a culture. He's good at mentoring players, and he's good at getting players in the right headspace.
Yep.
To have someone like that with you is priceless.
So we've got Peru and Denmark. So obviously, well, France and Australia, you think maybe we can get a result? Is that your prediction?
I think so.
I think we can get a result as well. I'm just going to go for it, because if we played France in the second game, third game, you know, they had a head of steam behind them, and you know, Pogba's probably realized how to play. But in the first game, it can just be like a butting of heads, and Jose Mourinho thinks that France and Australia are going through as 1 and 2. In the other game, we've got Peru and Denmark. Obviously, we'll go to Denmark first. We know about Christian Eriksen. He's actually been pretty impressive on the international stage of late, and I think he scored a hat trick for Denmark not too long ago.
And Nikos Bentner is injured, isn't he?
He's injured. He's not playing. Lord Bentner.
That's
the Prince of Denmark.
The best player of all time.
They were in the third seeded pot. Oh, is that right? Okay, I thought it said here. Yeah, they're another unknown quantity. I think they can draw against
Denmark as well.
I feel like in the bookies' odds, I think it's France and Denmark are the two favourites in this group. Christian Eriksen, like we said, they're best player by a long shot. I want to see if there's got any other players here Bentner's obviously not playing. They don't see anyone else here. So, do we know any other Danish players, Pete?
There's a few, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of them right now. But then we've also got Peru. Pablo Guerrero.
He's back.
Is this the one that... Paolo Guerrero, sorry. Is this the Guerrero from Bayern Munich? No.
No.
Can't be. From Flamengo. The 33-year-old captain scored 6 goals in qualifying and features after appealing against a FIFA doping ban. Paolo Guerrero. I reckon that's the one that used to play in Germany. I'm going to search that very quickly. But Peru, it says here, they were one of the favourites for South America's fifth spot in the World Cup.
Have an undefeated streak at the moment as well.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Peru and Denmark, what do you think is a result of that? I think
Peru's the dark horse of the group.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, we've got... What do we say? I reckon we say... I'm going to say Denmark are going to beat Peru there. So, that's our sort of... That's Group C done there. Now we go on to Group D, the one that I accidentally read out before. That's Paolo Guerrero, Guerrero from Bayern Munich. Yeah, he actually, did he come back at one stage? No, he didn't. No, he was just there for 2 seasons. Yeah. Yeah, that's the same one. Anyway, weird. He's 33 now. So he's got some experience behind him. Anyway, Group D. This seems like an easy group for Argentina if they don't come top of this group.
Well, no, you know what?
Argentina versus Iceland.
Nigeria are unbeaten in their
qualifying
campaign, I believe.
Well, we've got Argentina versus Iceland first up, and then we've got Croatia versus Nigeria is the second match.
It's trickier than people think. Don't forget, remember Iceland's last heroics in the Euros?
Yeah. They just put an ice wall in front of their
goal. And what's the population of their country?
Iceland. What was it? What is it?
800,000?
Yeah, it's very small. Oh, I think it's smaller than that.
Smaller?
Have a look. I think it's smaller than that. But we've got Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria. We'll look at these key players from the... We'll talk about Argentina first, because you and me actually have a soft spot for Argentina. Yeah. Maybe me more so. I mean, you're more Brazil-based. You like that side. I just want Argentina to win. I want them to win the whole World Cup.
Sorry, Kasper Schmeichel's the goalkeeper for Denmark.
Oh, that's a good thing. Yeah, we're going back to our group, Kasper Schmeichel.
Simon Kjær is the other one.
Yeah, Kai.
Christensen from Chelsea. There's actually a lot of players there.
Yeah, let's have a look here. Oh, good. Can you keep this open?
Yeah.
Denmark, a lot of good players there.
There's actually a few ones there that if you look at, you can remember them. Like, that's right him.
Yeah. They got a lot of those sorts of players. But just moving back on to Argentina, I want Messi to win the World Cup because we've got to put this to bed. Yeah. Before someone honestly thinks that Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player that's ever lived, before someone honestly thinks that is the correct answer, I just want Messi to lift this World Cup and just go fucking here, just stick it in everyone's face. Seriously, he's the best player. He's the best player ever.
It's time. And I think he knows it as well.
It's time.
I reckon that guy is going to be like doing all, I don't know.
He should be meditating. He should be doing all sorts.
I'm not going to say steroids, but I think the guy is going to be doing some serious praying and everything else in between because it's time.
It's time.
It really is.
I want them to win. By the way, sorry for these birds. There's birds outside our window tweeting and whatnot. They're tweeting.
They're tweeting. It's like the Liverpool fans.
They're tweeting on Twitter. No, they're not. So Argentina, Sergio Aguero, Gonzalo Higuain. Isn't that incredible that they got Higuain going, and didn't they left someone? They left Icardi behind.
But Lanzini just did SEO, so...
Yeah. Have they brought in anyone to replace him? No. By the way, Lanzini makes the Argentina squad. I wanted fucking Lanzini at Liverpool. People say you're a freaking moron for thinking that. I think he's a good player, but the ACL is...
I hate Higuain, by the way, and I can't believe he's cost Messi 2 trophies in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
World Cup final and the Copa America final.
Yeah. So he for some reason, for such a prolific goal scorer, he doesn't put away...
On the big stages, no.
Yeah. So hopefully they've just got Aguero up there, and maybe Higuain can be sort of... It should have been Icardi. It really should have been.
My thing with Argentina is I'm not particularly fond of their goalkeeper or fullbacks.
Right. They've always had a suspect.
Because if you look at their lineup,
I don't like Otamendi either.
Besides Otamendi, Fazio is their other centre back. Who, by the way, we destroyed Liverpool versus Roma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Rojo for Man United. He's constantly injured.
Mm.
They might have to play Mascherano centre back with Otamendi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Eber Banega as well in midfield.
Biglia, a lot of them have aged.
Yeah. So, and then Angel Di Maria as well.
There's not much there.
Dybala. I'm surprised that Dybala actually made it. He should have, for sure. But there was a period where he wasn't making the squad halfway through the season because of his bad form for Juventus.
So if you look at their goalkeeper, their best chance in goals is Caballero at Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sergio Romero from United, both second goalkeepers, not both starting number ones.
Hmm.
So it's hard.
Well, they're favourites against Iceland, but Iceland were renowned at Euro 2016. They were the story. They were putting up the brick wall, the ice wall in front of their defence. No one could get through them. They were having one shot on target and they were scoring it. Obviously, people know Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Okay, there you go.
330,000.
300, yeah.
330,000. Yeah. Look, they made it again. They're showing the fact that they've made this World Cup shows that they're a threat.
334,000 people in the country, and they're making the World Cup, and they've done made a mad story out of the Euros. Like,
imagine their mentality with Argentina's talent. My God, Argentina would win the World Cup in a heartbeat.
Imagine what they do there in Australia. But anyway. Yeah,
and that's that same thing I was saying before. When you've got the mentality of a country in every single one of your players going through their veins, that's everyone's on the same page. Everyone understands each other. I don't know if they win against Argentina, but seeing this group where we've got Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria, maybe they can come second. But as we go to the next game to sort of get a bit of an idea as to who could possibly finish second, we've got Croatia versus Nigeria. We've got Dejan Lovren of Liverpool playing for Croatia, Luka Modric as well. Nigeria have been... We haven't seen Nigeria in a while. They were really good once upon a time. I mean, we're going back to 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years ago, I would even say, we're going 2-3 World Cups ago, not just, in the last couple. Says here, key player, Jean-Obi Mikel. I mean, that's not a good sign.
Well, no, they also got Victor Moses as well.
Yeah, yeah, Victor Moses. But the thing is with Victor Moses is he's an attacker, but as what happens at Chelsea and Manchester United, they get lied to and they get played out of position in wing-back.
Yeah.
So, because they've got no other attacking, you know, they let their strikers do all the sort of attacking work and then they make their fullbacks do the donkey work.
So there's Ndidi as well from Leicester City.
Mm-hmm.
Ndidi's
a good player.
Yeah.
He's actually, I thought he was actually English.
Alex Iwobi.
Iwobi's English as well. They've got like, yeah. They may have Iheanacho a few of those.
From Leicester City as well.
They've got a lot of English players who are choosing to play for Nigeria. So that's good. Iheanacho. So they've got, obviously they got pace and that's a lot. A lot of the African sides do rely on that raw power and pace. So it's good to see Nigeria back in the World Cup, I would say.
They finished first anyway in their World Cup qualifications. They did.
And really, what a jersey, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Super sexy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and then Croatia, we've got Luka Modric from Real Madrid, like I said, Dejan Lovren. They're actually the team that qualified over Greece. They were too good. Oh my God, yeah. They were too good for Greece. But you know what? Croatia have always actually, they're not a bad, they're a dark horse as well. They're not going to win the World Cup. No way on the planet. Because you know what? You can sort of, for other teams, like a, you know, Portugal are not on the same level as Croatia, but once upon a time you would say that, you know, they've got just as good players as one another. Why not? You're not going to say why not for Croatia, but they will be a thorn in a lot of people. They can put out a lot of sides. That's for sure.
Well, let's see who they've got there as in there. In goals, they've got Subasic from Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
In the back, there's Koluka still.
They've got Ivan Rakitic, Ivan Perisic,
Dejan Lovren,
Mario Mandzukic. Yeah.
Who else have we got here? Oh, Mateja Kovacic. Kovacic. Right.
They got that's Serbia. We're going to go. Ooh, don't mistake Serbians with Croats, George.
Oh, Mandzukic up front. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, lots of talent in
Perisic,
that.
Perisic, plenty of goals.
What do we think about first and second in Group D? Argentina,
see,
Croatia.
This is harder to pick than people think because Nigeria is going to be that banana.
That's actually, you know what? Having said that, that's a very tough group.
That could be group, that's four, probably the group of death.
Four completely different teams. You've got Argentina with Messi, are a team that wants to just give the ball to the best player. Iceland are a defensive side with the 330,000 people all behind them. They've got Croatia, who are this notorious underdog thorn in the side team with lots of world-class players, Modric, Rakitic. And then you've got Nigeria, which is raw pace and a lot of young players and finished first in their group.
And again, the
that is
field.
A bit of a group of death.
But in my opinion, I think Nigeria, and I don't mean to, like, this. I don't want this to sound offensive or whatever, but I don't think that Nigeria will have the mental strength.
They're only young.
I think they will capitulate, maybe. But I do think they will. I think when the going gets tough with some African teams, I feel like they give in, they throw in the towel.
But there was that once upon a time where, like I said, especially around 2002, where you had Cameroon and Nigeria, they were actually, they put their money, they put their money where the mouth was.
And Ivory Coast with Didier Drogba, yeah, Toure,
You know, they've got the capacity to upset, but it's just such a hard group.
Argentina, Croatia for me.
Yeah. Let's go to Group E. And I'll read this out properly. So the first game is Costa Rica versus Serbia.
Yeah.
And then the second match, Brazil versus Switzerland. Why don't we talk about, it seems as though arguably, who would you say are the two highest ranked sides in that side?
Costa Rica, I think, is highest ranked.
Are they? After Brazil?
Besides Brazil, obviously. But I think Brazil, Serbia go through.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Brazil now.
Now, or do you want to go Serbia first?
We'll go chronologically. Okay, we'll go the first game is Costa Rica versus Serbia. I was about to bring up Minkovic Savic, who's the star player for Serbia.
For me, it's Marko Guric.
And then we've got Marko Guric as well, who said it was a dream come true to I can't believe he's made the squad, but then again, else is?
He's a brilliant player.
You think so?
Yeah.
They say he's a key player for Serbia's Branislav Ivanovic. My God, this is definitely a British publication. Who used to play in England once upon a time? Ivanovic. But yeah, it says he coached to be appointed. Fuck. Have they got a coach?
Look at their defenders, by the way. Kolarov. Yeah. Well, he's there. Ivanovic, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Tosic
is good, yeah. Natasic, yeah.
Milinkovic from Fiorentina.
Yep. What was it? How do you pronounce that? Milivovic. I don't know how to fucking say it. He's the guy that scored all the pens.
But look at this. Njanja Matic in middle.
Yep.
Marko Guric.
Mm-hmm.
Tadic from Southampton.
Yep. And then up front, they've got... I actually think is that still got Jovetic?
No. Gone.
No, okay, that's fine.
That Mitrovic from, what do you call
it? But he's from Montenegro, isn't he?
Yeah, he's Montenegro.
So that's different.
But Mitrovic from, who was that, Rafa's team in Newcastle?
Yeah.
At Fulham?
Yeah.
He's their striker.
He's been the one that he's been the one scoring most of the goals recently for Serbia, but I think that's a problem.
And he's the player to watch.
Yeah, Mitrovic. But I think that's a bit of, he's a hothead, he gets red cards a lot. He fell out of favour at Newcastle, a Newcastle side that couldn't score goals.
Yeah.
So I think they're weak up front, big time.
But I do think Serbia will be a great. And look, I've got.
I think they'll be strong, but I don't rate them.
I'm going to keep an eye on Serbia purely for two reasons. Number one, Guric.
Yeah. Big fan. True.
Big fan. So I hope he does well. That way, Jurgen Klopp kind of say, "In you come back, please. We've got there's a spot for you." Because I do think, you know, everyone talks about we need midfielders. Well, we've got a perfectly young, good one who actually helped Cardiff get into the Premier League.
Mm.
Ever since when he entered that side, Cardiff just went up and up.
By the way, not just to play devil's advocate, he did play well, and Warnock loved him, and he said we would love to use him again. But he fell out of favour a little bit towards the end. Not out of favour. I think it was just a youth thing and an experience thing. He wasn't as integral as we all think. He did play a lot.
Scored a few goals.
I think maybe one.
No, I think it was two or three.
Two or three, was it? But just to sort of, you know, curb the excitement with him, it wasn't as big a sort of thing as what a lot of us are making it out. It's good for him, though, because he's been, for the last year and a half, I think he's 21, maybe 22 even. So, so that's Serbia. And then there's Costa Rica as well. Key player, Keylor Navas from Real Madrid. Good goalkeeper. Did you see his save the other day?
No, I don't care.
For Costa Rica, he made a freaking awesome save.
Stuffing.
Yeah. And that's their fifth World Cup appearance, it says here.
Oh, good on.
Impressive for a country with a population just under 5 million. Anyway, Brian Ruiz. Is that the Fulham? That's the Fulham Brian Ruiz. I think he just scored recently. Yeah. Who did they play recently?
Oh, my God. I can't believe still playing.
Who did they play? I was just watching the highlights the other day. They played somebody. I'll get it somewhere. But he scored. And Navas had like this off the line, incredible save. And then it's got Borges in the midfield as well. But who do we think about between Costa Rica and Serbia? I think Costa Rica win for sure. So now we go on to Brazil versus Switzerland.
Now we're talking. I think we're looking at the strongest Brazilian side since possibly 2002 to 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're looking at all the players in that squad are at their peak. I think you're looking at players who are playing their best football they've played to date. You look at Coutinho, for example. Look at Firmino. Look at Jesus scoring. His goal record. Jesus' goal record under Tite is unbelievable. That's why he's going to be starting in front of Firmino. And he came out and said that in one of the presses.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of his goal rate to game ratio playing under Tite. He goes, I can't. How can I leave him out of the squad?
It's true.
Firmino has been exceptionally unbelievable well in the Premier League, but for me, Jesus has been number one.
Guess what as well? In the last game, Firmino was another sub, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He came on, so he scored and assisted as a sub.
Yeah.
Look, Firmino, as much as he would want to start, he's just really happy to be in the Brazil squad. You see his teeth, man. Yeah,
hang on a second.
He's grinning.
If you're bringing on Firmino and he's scoring and assisting, that's what wins you World Cup.
Well, exactly. What I was going to say was, as much as he'd want to start, he's more than happy to do that job for Brazil. And it's actually, contrary to his Liverpool sub appearances, he's making an impact.
And what about, you've got Firmino and Douglas Costa on the bench to bring on as attackers. Like, think of that for a second. Because Willian will start one side. Neymar will start the other. Jesus will start in the middle. It'll be Coutinho, Paulinho, and Casemiro starting in the middle three.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's kind of like, oh, but you know, their defense and that is not that good. Hang on a second. Marcelo, Thiago Silva, Miranda, and Danilo with Alisson in goals, or Edison, pick one.
It's going to be Alisson.
It's actually not that bad.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think you're looking at all over the pitch, the strongest Brazil could possibly be.
Mm. Yeah, well, they say here as well, and with all those players, and by the way, I think Neymar scored an incredible goal the other day.
Freak.
Absolutely.
He's going to break Pelé's goal scoring record for Brazil.
But having said that, he's 26, Coutinho's 25. I think Coutinho's their best player. I'm going out on a limb saying I think Coutinho's their best player, most important player as well.
Yeah, he'll be, don't worry, Coutinho will score a few from outside the
It's box. Incredible what he's doing for Brazil right now. I've been watching all their games, their friendlies before the tournament starts. He's been fucking incredible, really, really good. And you know what? You know what annoys me about that? Is that Neymar, Brazil will win the World Cup. Neymar will lift it.
Yeah.
It'll be
a Neymar show.
And then everyone's going to say he's the best player in the world and he's the greatest player of all time. And someone like Coutinho sits there and probably carries Brazil with pulling the strings.
Casemiro will be so important for this because they're going to be so attacking. And we all know how good Casemiro is at blocking the holes. So I think you're looking at the most...
And fullbacks, is it still... Sorry.
Yeah. No, they'll still go. Marcelo will still go.
Marcelo and Danilo. Yeah. Danilo. Will still go. Yeah.
So you're looking at Casemiro probably being one of the most important players in attack and defence.
Mm.
Like he is for Real Madrid.
They're versing Switzerland. All we know about them is Jerdan Shaqiri. Jerdan. And he's fit. He's enjoying his football again after a shocking season with Stoke. But you can't see any other winner apart from Brazil against Switzerland.
They're going to win, in my opinion, they're winning the World Cup.
Brazil?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big favourites. Even though we've got other teams that we think are possibly going to, you know, challenge, it's got to be Brazil.
If you look at every team, strength all over the park, players in their peak and things like that, I think you're looking at, if you had to pick, it's going to be a Brazil-Germany final. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about players on the park, players in their peak, blah, 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 maybe a Brazil-Germany. Or there could be a throw into a little rabbit in the hat kind of, rabbit into the mix. Belgium, maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at Brazil and I think just too strong everywhere. And if everyone talks about their defence, you know, they've only copped in 21 games under Tite, they've only actually copped 5 goals.
Jesus, in 21 games.
Yeah, and he's got a win rate of 80% win rate. So 47 goals scored, 5 against. They've lost 1 game out of 21.
They're the strongest side for sure.
And you're looking at, but they're weak in defence. So people are a little bit weird like that. And it's a lot of social media's fault. And I blame social media for a lot of things in today's world. But yeah.
Absolutely. Well, having a look at the schedule there, we're up to Group E and... That's pretty much the weekend done. And then there's a whole second group. So we wanted to try and get through all the groups. It was just not going to be possible.
We love it too much.
We've done it nearly an hour's worth of World Cup previews. But the good thing is, for people who do want a World Cup preview, this will last you throughout the weekend up until Monday, Tuesday, whatever part of the world you are. And then probably by that time, we'll probably do the second half because all their games come... they come after Monday, and that's starting with Germany, Mexico, which is Group F, and then you got Group F there: Germany, Mexico, Sweden, South Korea. Then you got Group G, Group H, and then that's it. So we might leave those for the second half of this World Cup preview. So anyway, hope you guys have enjoyed that. It's been really interesting. We were just even saying then, or before we started the show, that when you look at all the teams, you look at their players, you go, oh my God, yeah, I know that player from here. And we did that with Guerrero when we were, you know, it's like, oh, that's the Bayern Munich Guerrero. Now he's 33 and he's, you know, a veteran. But, you know, it's I think some of the highlights of this first half have definitely been, you know, Australia, Argentina, France, even looking at that Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria group, Brazil, obviously someone we think is a favorite, the Spain-Portugal match that we looked at there, obviously Russia opening up, on you know, this, which is coming up very soon, and then Australia obviously
Australia shocking France
with maybe a result, maybe even a win, and then we've got Mohamed Salah's Egypt taking on former Liverpool striker Luis Suarez, but we don't think we're going to see Salah in that game. But there's a lot of big games in this first half of the World Cup in the group stages, but we'll get on to our second half of the preview very shortly, maybe over the next couple of days, 3 or 4 days over the weekend. But until then, this has been the LFC Podcasting Couch. Hope you've enjoyed it. That's been Pete. Has it been Pete?
I think so.
I think so. We'll catch you for the second half very shortly.